This is Bronson Hermuth coming to you from Music Row, Nashville, Tennessee. Today I have the honor of interviewing musician, songwriter, artist, producer, Dean Miller. How are you, Dean?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Man, were you born in Nashville?
No. I didn't live here till I was 25 years old.
Really?
I was born in Los Angeles, raised there, and in New Mexico, a little bit in Texas, and then I went to college back in L.A., and I moved here when I was 25.
So what did you go to college for?
I studied acting and filmmaking, and during my college years, you know, I grew up with a somewhat well-known songwriter in the family, and so when I was making up songs, I was exceptionally intimidated. I kept my songs kind of hidden to myself, and I really didn't think I was good enough to do it for a living. And I was probably right at the time, but when I got to college, I kind of got out from under the shadow of my father and was able to, I met some musicians and we formed a band and music started taking over. And by the time I got out of college, I had a fever for music and I just really went with it.
Now your main instrument is guitar, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you play any other instruments?
No. I do. I noodle around on stuff, but I wouldn't call it playing.
Are you self-taught?
Yes. I don't know what I'm doing. I have no idea what I'm doing. I always say I just vomit up creativity and I don't know what I'm doing. I have no musical education. I can't read music. But I can tell you that I go by a quote that Sting said. Sting said, "My talent stops at my wrists." And that's exactly how I feel. I have it all inside me, but the dexterity to do it is not all there.
You know, how old were you when you wrote your first song?
Oh, I was probably 13, 14 years old. And I used to make up songs all the time. But I kind of kept them hidden. I might play them for my parents now and then. But I just was not, serious about it, you know. And I really, I kind of intimidated myself, I think, out of showing it to anybody. But by the time I got to college, I found these other musicians, and they gave me the confidence to try. And then I came and visited Nashville, and I went back to L.A., and I had this little demo, and I was going around handing it to people and stuff. And Joe Galante had me, they called me in L.A., and I'd been back 4 days. I'd come down here for 1 week during fanfare and handed everybody my cassette. That's how old I am, cassette. And Joe Galante flew me back here and said, "We really like you." And after the meeting, he said, "I don't think you're ready, but you do have something," and blah, blah. It was enough to make me move here.
Mm-hmm. So what was the first time that you actually went into the studio to record?
I had gone in L.A. several times, and I learned a lot about it out there through trial and error. I've never been formally educated. And then when I came to Nashville, I got a publishing deal with Sony. And I started having to do my own demos. And I had, an engineer, Pat McMakin, started taking me in. And through working with him, I learned what happens in the studio and how to work it. And in my lifetime, I've gone from reel tape to DAT to CD to now Pro Tools and digital. And so I've been through all the formats. And it's all just kind of instinctual, what I do.
Totally on-the-job training.
On-the-job training. And I still wouldn't know how to twist the knobs. But I know exactly what to ask for. I know exactly who to cast and how to cast it. I know exactly how to put a record together. I don't have any doubt about my ability in that area. But if you sat me down in front of the board, and I wouldn't know where to start.
Yeah, you don't consider yourself an engineer.
I am not an engineer, yeah.
So your very first time that you actually produced, where you went in and you were going to produce a session, what was that project?
It was probably demos early on. Looking back, I probably wasted a lot of time and money demoing songs that maybe weren't worth it. But in retrospect, it was kind of like, you know, during the time I had my first publishing deals, it was the Garth Brooks era. So there was a lot of free-flowing money, you know. And I would have a publishing deal, and I didn't know any better. I'd just go in with the last 4 songs I wrote or 5 songs and said, "Can I demo?" And then they'd let me go in the studio and hire musicians, and I just thought this is the greatest thing in the whole world. So I tried to write as much as I could, so I could go in the studio as much as I could, and I probably wasted a lot of money doing that, but that's how I learned. So it was probably a demo project. I don't remember the first time that I produced solely on my own. But
now, when you got your first deal as an artist, what was that situation?
Record deal or publishing deal?
Record deal.
My first record deal, I'd been in town about 4 years, and I had a showcase for, I think it was Mercury at the time, and they passed. Interesting story. They passed, and Keith Stegall was the A&R guy there, and Keith signed himself. I don't even remember that when that happened.
I do.
But Keith was the A&R guy and signed himself. So they passed on me, and then but Herky Williams was in that audience, and he was working for Liberty Records, and he went back and said, "I just saw Dean Miller." This is how old I am. Jimmy Bowen was the president of the label.
Well, sure.
And he said, "I saw Dean Miller," and but Rene Bell had said, "I know Dean Miller," which I knew Rene Bell. And then there was actually a kind of an argument between them about who got me, who got to get me
right
on the label. And it felt really good. But yeah, that's where I got my first record. It was Capitol.
Now, who produced that session?
When I got that record, Greg Brown. Greg Brown produced that, who produced all the Travis Tritt hits in the 90s and stuff like that.
So there you were sitting watching that.
Right.
Learning from him.
Yes. And I learned a lot about, during that process, I learned a lot about budgets and money, union rules. You know, when you have a guitar player playing at 10 o'clock at night, it costs differently than a guitar player that's playing at 10 in the morning. I didn't know these things. I was totally naive. So when we'd sit there till midnight and work, I didn't realize it was my money going out the window. That first project, it was just unbelievable. Greg Brown produced me. I went through Jimmy Bowen leaving and Scott Hendricks taking over, and then Scott Hendricks leaving, and then Pat Quigley taking over. I went through three different presidents, and nobody ever put anything out, just sitting there on the label. But through that, I was learning everything about the behind-the-scenes stuff and the recording process and everything, and making videos and everything else. So when I lost that deal, I went a couple of years without a deal. I mean, it's just strange how life works. I don't know how detailed you want me to get into, but I went to a Waylon Jennings show at the Ryman, and I saw Tony Brown two rows up, and I had just happened, I knew Tony, and he was always my hero. I always wanted to work with Tony Brown, because Tony Brown made the records that changed my life. Steve Earle made me want to be a writer, you know, Lyle Lovett, Nancy Griffith, all of these great records, Roddy Crowell, you know. So Tony was somebody, I knew his name and idolized him and wanted to work with him. So I saw him at a Waylon Jennings show, and I waved, and he waved back, and I didn't think anything of it. And a couple days later, my publisher was in his office pitching songs, and Tony says, "What's Dean Miller doing?" Because he remembered seeing me at the Waylon show. And she said, "He's trying to get a record deal." And he said, "Well, I want to see him play live." So I did a showcase for Tony, and Tony took me over to MCA. And during the development process, he was leaving there and going to Universal South, so he took me to Universal South. And over there I made a record, but they found Joe Nichols, and I think they thought Joe Nichols was the better shot. So, I learned another hard business lesson over there, and, I was there 3 years, and then they dropped me without ever putting an album out. But that album I got to work on. That album I got to put my two cents on and co-produce and help and make choices. And I was really involved in that album. And then I left there. And all this time I'm producing demos, producing for other people, producing all over the place. But I got a deal on Koch Records. And on Koch, they told me that if I had kept the budget low, I could produce. Because they didn't want to risk a lot of money on somebody who didn't have a track record. So I had a very, very minuscule budget and made what I think is the best record I made of all three. And that was called Platinum. Because when they asked me what I wanted to call it, I said, "By God, I'm going to have one platinum record in my life." So I called it Platinum.
Right.
So the album was called Platinum. And then that label shut down 2 weeks before the release of that. So,
but at that time, though, that's really the first time that you really got to take the bull by the horns.
Yes. That's the first time they just said, "Here's money. Call us when it's done." And I made every choice. So whatever you hear on that album, good, bad, or indifferent, is entirely my fault or my what I did.